Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura. Text number 38. Nothing on the board. So I'll just read the translation and the purport. With deliberation, one will see that the Supreme Soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. The total material energy is the cause of the material manifestation, but the material energy is caused by him. Therefore, he is the cause of all causes, the manifester of intelligence and the senses. He is perceived as the supersoul of everything. Without him, everything would be dead. You, as that supersoul, the supreme controller, are the only one remaining. Purport. The word sarva vastuni, vastu svarupa, indicate that the Supreme Lord is the active principle of everything, as described in the Brahma Samhita 5.35. Ekopyaso rachayitum jagadandakotim yachchaktirasti jagadandachayat yadantat andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham dhamaham vajami. I worship the personality of Godhead, Govinda, who enters the existence of every universe and every atom by one of his plenary portions, and thus manifests his infinite energy throughout the material creation. By his one plenary portion, his Paramatma, Andaryami, the Lord is all-pervading throughout the unlimited universes. He is the Pratyak, or Kshetragyam Chapimam Vidhi. He is the Pratyak, or Andaryami, of all living entities. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 13.3, Kshetragyam Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Kshetre Shuparada. O son of Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower of all bodies, in all bodies. Because the Lord is the super soul, he is the active principle of every living entity, and even the atom, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarasta. He is the actual reality. According to the various stages of intelligence, one realizes the presence of the Supreme in everything through the manifestations of his energy. The entire world is permeated by the three gunas, and one can understand his presence according to one's modes of nature, eternal nature. So the text again. With deliberation, one will see that the Supreme Soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. The total material energy is the cause of the material manifestation, but the material energy is caused by him. Therefore, he is the cause of all causes, the manifester of intelligence and the senses. He is perceived as the super soul of everything. Without him, everything would be dead. You, as that super soul, the supreme controller, are the only one remaining. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimade Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ramane. Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shundavadi Paskadhyade Siddhanta. Something about Krishna's inconceivable energies and potencies are explained here, that it is not possible for the conditioned soul to actually conceive of who Krishna is, because we don't even know who we are. Since we can't even figure out who we are, how is it going to be possible to find out who the Supreme Soul is? But for those who have realized it, those who are speaking in the Bhagavatam, generally they're giving us information so that we have some direction in which to go in. Because under the modes of material nature, one is more or less blind. As it says, Sattva Narupa Sarvasha Sharad Bhavati Bharata Sharo Mayo Yo Puru Sho Yo Yat Strata Sevasaha. That according to the modes of material nature, one is situated under, one has a certain kind of faith. It is not that only people who belong to a certain religion have a certain faith. Everyone has faith in something. Generally speaking, in the mode of ignorance, we have faith in our body, in bodily existence. So that's more or less universal. Everyone has faith that my body is good. Everyone else's body may be partly good, but my body is good. It's good for me, at least. And my mind, it may be disturbing to me, but basically because it's connected to me, it's a nice mind. In other words, anything that has some connection to the soul, somehow or another, becomes purified by our connection with it, and it becomes good. And anything that helps, somehow or another, our satisfying our mental or emotional state or our physical state, that automatically becomes good also. And those things which threaten our emotional states, or threatens our conception of life, or threatens our bodily existence, those are bad. So good and evil in the material world all depends upon our situation under the material nature, and our situation under the material nature, our conception of it depends on the modes that we're situated under. Therefore, what one thinks is good in the mode of ignorance, one will think is bad in the mode of passion. What we thought when we first became devotees was good, probably we think differently now. Hopefully we think differently. It's not as good, or it's not good anymore. When one gets a perspective on reality, then the so-called good is not clearly so good anymore. People are brought up with the conception of nationalism. Whatever my country does, somehow or another, it's good. It may not be good for anyone else, but it's good for my country. And it may not even be good for the country, but because somehow or another it's connected to the idea of nationalism, then it becomes good. But when one becomes a little bit more advanced, one sees that the whole conception is wrong, because it's based upon the wrong conception. That is, I am this body, I belong to a certain country, I have a certain interest in the country, but actually there's no such thing as countries. As Prabhupada used to say, if you were born as a Belgium tree, then you wouldn't really think I'm belonging to the Belgian country. I'm just a tree, nor is anyone else. If you were born as a rabbit in Belgium and you were somehow or another, you hopped over to the Netherlands, they wouldn't require a passport. The rabbits on the other side of the border, of course nowadays there's no passport anyhow, so everyone's allowed to hop over. But if we had to fly into Russia, say the birds had to fly into Russia from Belgium, the Russian birds wouldn't stop them at the border and say, sorry, you need a visa. All Belgian birds need visas to go to Russia. No, they don't have such a conception. Even the birds don't have that conception. But unfortunately, the human beings have developed conceptions that even the animals haven't been able to consider. So that's according to the modes of nature that one is situated in. But the real conception is Krishna consciousness. So how to become conscious of Krishna, how to get the actual conception. Well, the easiest way Krishna says is Tesham Satatam Yuktanam Vajantam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upiyati Te. That the great devotees, they talk about Krishna and the process of devotional service. And if one takes it seriously and then takes up trying to steadily perform service to Krishna with enthusiasm, then Krishna starts giving one intelligence. How to become more steady, how to become more enthusiastic in devotional service. So that's actually the intelligence that Krishna himself personally wants to give. Other than that, then Krishna simply provides intelligence according to what we deserve. We've desired so many things in the past, and on the basis of that we've done so many activities, and on the basis of that we've gotten this body, and on the basis of that we're being impelled to do more activities in the material world. And in order to perform those activities, and in order to fulfill certain desires that are arising, then Krishna is giving us intelligence by according to what we deserve and desire. But that intelligence, it's not what Krishna really wants to give us, because it has no real progress to the self. It is simply changing from one conditioned state to the next. Just like a cow is tied up by a rope and it's allowed in the pasture, so whether it's allowed 15 meters or 10 meters or 100 meters, it's still tied up by a rope. Similarly, the conditioned soul, under the material nature, the modes of material nature, sometimes in goodness he has a bigger rope, sometimes in passion smaller, sometimes in ignorance hardly any rope, at least enough to hang himself. But more than that he doesn't really have. So similarly, in the absence of actually understanding how things are going on, we're actually imagining ourselves to be doing so many activities, being somehow or another, sometimes the controller, sometimes the enjoyer, sometimes the victim, sometimes the sufferer. What we don't see is all being arranged by Krishna. And it's all based upon our desires. Desires are multi-dimensional in the sense that sometimes desires remain on the subtle platform. Sometimes we actually will carry things out with these gross senses. So the desire is multidimensional in the material world, and it depends upon our perceptions of things. But in any case, Krishna is simply sensing our desire, just like one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. And he's the one who's ordering the material nature to arrange itself, so to fulfill our desires. Now when the desires of Krishna conscious, then they serve to help us go forward towards understanding our relation with Krishna and ultimately our relation with everyone and everything in relation to Krishna. And when we're desiring other ways, then simply according to what we deserve, Krishna is supplying or arranging the material nature to facilitate our the fulfillment of those particular desires we have. And we may suffer as a result of them, we may enjoy as a result of them, but ultimately everyone suffers. Because even if it's a fantastic desire that gets the acclamation of everyone, still it means that we'll have to take another body, and that will not be very pleasant. When you're in the womb of the mother, that all the applause that you got is probably not worth it. You wonder whether it was all the worth it to be here for 9 months, that people clap for me for 20 seconds. Of course, people are in ignorance, we don't take that seriously, we think, oh, it's a joke. That how is it, I'm a good person, nothing like that will ever happen to me. But every rabbit, every cockroach, every mosquito has the same idea. It can't happen to me because I'm a good person. And I gave a donation. But that's not the way the material nature works. Therefore, the whole idea is to somehow or another become convinced that we have to take shelter of Krishna. and that Krishna is not an ordinary person, that by taking shelter of him, then we just get some kind of ordinary results. After all, if it's true that there is a person called Krishna, Prabhupada once said, the only problem, one of the problems in the Hare Krishna movement is that the devotees don't believe in Krishna. So if there is a person called Krishna, and he happens to be in every atom, that's pretty good. I mean, try and fit into an atom. See how far you can get. Try to fit into one atom. But he's in every atom. Of course, this, you know, this gets into the realm of one, you know, listening to the sound of playing cartels with one hand. Our minds are so limited, our conceptions are so limited. How could we, even to think of, you know, what an atom is, and that Krishna is in every atom, it just, you go to the seashore and you see the ocean, and then start thinking how Krishna is in every atom in the whole ocean. And then he's in every atom in the whole world, and the whole, all these planets that we look up in the sky. And in between them also. And this is one little universe and a bag of mustard seeds. And it's the smallest universe. And considering that if you take one little dot and you draw a line 50 kilometers away, so that one little dot indicates the inside of the universe, which half is filled with the water from the Garbhodak Ocean, and the other is filled up with planets. And that line that you draw 50 kilometers away, that's the coverings of the universe. Think about that for a few hours. And Krishna's in every atom and in between the atoms. And Abhijanandima. And that's, this universe is the smallest of all the universes. Our Brahma is just a tiny little Brahma with four heads. And when Brahma went to see Lord Krishna at Dwarka, he found that there are Brahmas with 10 million heads. And the other universes were proportionally bigger according to the number of heads they had. So who can conceive of Krishna? At the same time, when he appears before, when Brahma comes, and Krishna, he sees Krishna, Krishna is holding fruit salad in his left hand with yogurt. He appears to be a coward boy, uneducated coward boy, doesn't even know which hand to hold the yogurt in, and the fruit salad. And yet he's the person from which the whole thing's coming from, everything's coming from, and he's knows the past, the present, and the future. Not only he knows everything that's going on everywhere, but he knows everything that's ever happened everywhere. And he doesn't need a computer. He doesn't need, you know, a little notepad. He doesn't carry around a pencil in case he forgets. Krishna never forgets. And he knows everything that's going to happen in the future, which is eternal. And we think we've understood this whole thing. Oh yeah, I read Bhagavad Gita, I understand the whole thing. Well, good luck. Therefore, our first business is trying to understand, at least we're not the body. Other things are probably will take some time. Matter of fact, they'll take eternity. The eternity, even Krishna's finding out new things about himself. So we, as Brahma said, that the scientists may be able to count all the atoms in the whole universe, or the amount of, you know, sunlight, the rays in the sunlight, but I don't think they'll be able to count the unlimited qualities of Krishna, even if they're able to count all these things. Or think of it this way, that there are more universes than the grains of sand on the beach. These are all inconceivable. Achintya. And yet Krishna is able to stay in our heart, and he will give us intelligence if we actually ask for it. We simply have to ask for it. But who's asking for it? Most people are simply asking Krishna to go away. Please, Krishna, don't interfere with my existence. I'm trying to get rid of you, and if you agree to that, then I'll appreciate it. I want to pretend that I am person in every atom, in every universe, in spiritual material. Let me pretend like that. So it's just a pretension. But if one turns to Krishna, then one will be able to see Krishna, how he is actually controlling things, according to one's intensity of purpose to serve Krishna. In the mode of ignorance, one has no idea how things are being controlled. In the mode of passion, one thinks that he's the controller, person in the mode of passion. In the mode of goodness, one is able to see that this controller, exactly who that controller is, why he's controlling, may not be 100% clear, but one at least recognizes the controller. In the mode of pure goodness, transcendental goodness, Krishna sees it. One sees that actually Krishna is the friend, and he's trying to help people, and he'll be able to control things in such a way as to help people become Krishna conscious, if someone wants it. And if someone wants to forget Krishna, Krishna will arrange things in such a way is that we can forget Krishna forever. So that's simply our choice at every moment, whether we want to remember Krishna or whether we want to forget Krishna. Whether we want Krishna to help us remember him, or we want Krishna to help us forget him. Simply we have to make a decision. Otherwise, it says here, without Krishna consciousness, more or less, we're already dead. We don't have to worry about dying, because we're already dead. Because the body's already dead. And because we're absorbed in the dead body, and other dead bodies, more or less we're dead. We have no real experience of life. Hardly any life. Sometimes a little bit more life when we're awake, then we think we're alive. But actually our living consciousness is more or less not very exciting. That's why people have to watch movies, because their lives are so boring. So they have to see someone spinning around 100 times and they think that's exciting. And as the mode of ignorance progresses, we see that things have to become even more dramatic, drastic, in order to capture people's attention. Because their lives are becoming more and more dead, more and more unexcited, unenlivened. But real life is completely, at every moment, it's unlimitedly exciting. When Krishna's coming home, it's not like people are sitting around thinking, oh, Krishna's coming home. You know, every day we got to get out there and greet him, or else we'll be considered bad devotees, and I want to be considered a good devotee. So I got to drag myself away from this Chintamani couch and go and meet a coward boy every day. Well, people, every day it's more exciting. Even Srimati Radharani, she thinks that hardly I've ever seen Krishna. Now I'm getting my first opportunity to see Krishna. And everyone's thinking like that at every moment in the spiritual world. So that's life. Ever more exciting, ever more enthusiastic. Everything is ever fresh and ever more wonderful. One is never disappointed. Oh, Krishna came back today. It was the same old Krishna. He played the same old tune. I wish we had another one. Maybe someone could teach him something else to play. No, it's ever more exciting, ever more enjoyable. And for Krishna also. It's not that Krishna thinks, oh, I got to come back today. I got to play my flute. And everyone's going to be the same old people are going to be there to greet me. And probably it's going to be the same old prasadam. And I got to do this eternally. I quit. I can't think of doing this forever. It's just too much. I'm tired. Trying to take care of unlimited living energy is boring. No, for Krishna, every moment is ever more exciting, even more interesting. And even Krishna is learning new things. Without that, everything is actually, we're dead. We're actually
living in a dead state of existence, but we think it's life. And people are trying to make it exciting a little bit more through drugs or a sex life or something, try to find some excitement, but ultimately it always fails and becomes disappointing. And even the great heroes in the movies, they themselves get bored and wind up committing suicide. So what to speak of the ordinary people? So I'll stop there. Any comments? Questions? Yes.
If Krishna is so inconceivable and graspable, how can we come to love him?
Because Krishna is so inconceivable that he can actually appear in such a way as that we can love him. We can, because he's unlimited, but he can make himself limited so that we can perceive him. We'll never see the whole Krishna, because even Krishna doesn't understand himself completely. But we'll see enough to completely fall in love with him. Prahlad Maharaj said that if the happiness of Brahman was multiplied 100 trillion times, it wouldn't equal to an atomic fraction in one drop in the ocean of devotional service. So at least that much we'll get. We'll be able to enter into the ocean of devotional service, and that will be billions and trillions and hundreds and quadrillions of times more experience and happiness with Krishna than we're presently experiencing. So we may not get the unlimited, but 100 trillion quadrillion is enough for us right now. Yes?
What's behind the Supreme Personality of God?
Mother Jasoda.
In Christianity, it's
there. She's always right.
I have never... I
have
never
really
read
or seen in any other religions that
God has so many, or Krishna has so many names.
Does it
mean that with every name he
has a different personality? Yeah, he has a different personality, sure. He has unlimited. He's not schizophrenic. Just like we have so many different personalities, too. You know, when we're meeting our mother, we have one personality. When we meet our father, we have a different personality. When we meet our friends, we have a completely different personality. We meet our children, we have a different personality. So we also change our personality according to who we're associating with. So Krishna can do that. The only difference is he can do it simultaneously and he doesn't get confused. And when we become self-realized, we get some ability like that also. That ability that we have now to change our personality also becomes intensified and magnified. So, it's just that we don't have much of a personality right now, but we have much experience right now. So, it's hard to understand someone who has unlimited power, since we have such small amount of power. Yes.
Many times we use that word personality, but does it actually exist on a spiritual level? I mean, the spiritual identity.
Yeah, of course. Our personality.
What does it actually mean, personality?
Just the same thing as it means now. Likes and dislikes and different talents and qualities. And same thing as it is now. This body's dead, so it's being manifested on the basis of personality, at least on the basis of the modes of nature. And the personality coming through it is ourselves. It may not be our real personality, but it's manifested on the basis of personality. Just like a puppet show. The puppets, they're dead. They have no personality. But they appear to have a personality because there's someone manipulating the puppet. So personality is the basis of even the movements of the dead person. The dead material nature. It's all based on personality. Yes.
Well, like you said, that Krishna is always learning something. So I was wondering how it's possible. Is it that he knows everything, but he plays like, oh, I learned something new?
No, he's always realizing new things. Of course, we don't know what he's realizing. It's not like he's, 2 + 2 = 3. No, it's 4. Oh, wow, I didn't know. It's not the same kind of realizations we have in the material energy. It's spiritual realizations. The beauty, the wonderful personalities and the natures of his devotees. He's always realizing new things about himself, how he can serve his devotees. It's all basis of love and person and relationships. He's realizing new things. Realizing new bliss also, new pleasures in loving affairs with his devotees. Every time he tastes prasadam given by his devotees, it's like the first time. It's a new realization.
It's not material knowledge. It's not material knowledge.
No, it's spiritual. It's completely. Everything is becoming more and more spiritualized, the spiritual world. Anything else? Yes.
I was just wondering if different cultures have different modes, because...
Well, everything has a different mode.
Yeah.
Mostly it's ignorance. Different varieties of ignorance. A little passion. Drops of passion here and there. But we can see that the general mode is ignorance. I am the body. These things that belong to me. My goal of life is to preserve the body. I can keep the body alive and I'm successful. When the body dies, I'm unsuccessful. So basically the whole Kali Yuga is pervaded by ignorance. The little R thrown in. Little R. Little music. Think of the people when they die. But otherwise there's not much variety. We don't really find many countries, but predominantly in mostly in ignorance and passion. We don't find much goodness. Yes?
In the last sentence, in the Prabhupada, it's written, another sentence. The entire world is permeated by the three goodness, and one can understand his presence according to the Lord's most significant nature.
Yeah. Krishna is present everywhere. Krishna is moving everything. Everything is being done by Krishna. But in the mode of ignorance, we don't believe in Krishna. We think we're the controllers. There's no other controller but ourselves. Everything depends on me. In the mode of passion, we think we're here to enjoy. There's no other person enjoying but me. In the mode of goodness, we think we're the saviors, that I'm going to save everyone. We don't believe that Krishna is actually the one who's saving people. So, in the mode of goodness, at least we realize that we're not the controllers, and we're not here to enjoy, but we think we're the ones who are actually saving people. Mode of passion. We may not think so much ultimately that I am the proprietor of everything. We think we want to become the enjoyer of everything. So according to our modes of nature, we perceive Krishna in different ways. Like in the mode of ignorance, people won't believe that there is a God. Mode of passion, people will believe that maybe there's a God, but he's meant to serve me. And the mode of goodness, one believes that, I should serve God, but I'll get something in return. At least I'll get liberation ultimately. He'll save me. So, one doesn't believe in God, doesn't see any God anywhere. One sees God in different places as a order supplier, the reciprocator, the owner of the big bread factory in the sky. Delivers bread whenever I ask for him. And the other one sees God as the object who's going to save me. Whenever I ask him, he comes and helps me out. Is that clear?
Because I can understand. So I can understand his presence.
To different degrees. They hardly understand at all. But they either understand something. Someone comes along and hits, you say something nasty to someone, they hit you.
and you understand that, you know, I'm not God. There's something bigger than me out there causing to hit me. There's not much I understand. It's better than the amoeba who just gets devoured by the other amoeba. There's not that much more. So, Krishna, the Dhammi Buddhyogam Dham, or Savasya Chanam Release Anavishto Matak Smriti Argyanam Apovanam Cha. So, according to the mode of nature, then we're being supplied our own reality. And part of that reality is ultimately who's actually the controller around here. Because we're trying to manipulate and control nature. Who's actually the enjoyer? Who's actually the friend? So people have to go into the modes, they'll have a different perception of them. But that all those three things indicate Krishna. The actual friend, the actual controller, and the actual enjoyer. And we're always the secondary enjoyer. Either we enjoy directly through Krishna's happiness, or not directly, but we enjoy Krishna's happiness, or we enjoy the happiness, so-called happiness, of material sense gratification. It's always indirect for the soul. Happiness is never direct. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandaraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. For Brahmanandi.